This is Audible.
Analysis of David Hackett Fisher's Washington's Crossing by Milky Way, narrated by Dwight Equitz. Overview. Washington's Crossing, 2004, by David Hackett Fisher, is a narrative history of the events that led to George Washington's crossing of the Delaware on Christmas night in 1776. This bold move leading to a victory for the Continental Army was a pivotal moment in the American Revolution. It was a culmination of Washington's unification of a disparate group of rebel militias, and it also proved that even the substantial British Army had vulnerabilities. In November 1776, General Washington was brooding over the recent defeat of the Continental Army. New York had fallen to British forces. During the battle, he made many tactical errors. Due to a lack of army intelligence and poor troop positioning, the Americans had lost approximately 2,800 troops. He despaired of the state of the army, which was a collection of mostly untrained farmers and tradesmen, all of whom were unaccustomed to traditional military discipline. He led his beleaguered forces in retreat to a position across the Delaware River in Pennsylvania. He knew he had to regroup or face further defeat. Meanwhile, General William Howe, commander of the British troops, directed his forces to make headquarters in New Jersey. Howe dispersed his troops around the state. He knew dividing them was risky, but believed the Continental Army was so badly beaten it would not launch an attack. The British Army at the time was a collection of separate regiments, including kilt-wearing Scots and aristocratic horse brigades. Despite their many differences, all British regiments were under strong central control and were highly disciplined. Howe sent a group of German mercenaries with their leader Karl Emilius von Dunop to take a central position along the Delaware River at Bordentown. He sent another group of Hessian forces to defend Trenton 7 miles north, and he positioned British troops 6 miles south in Burlington. In the meantime, independent rebel militias had sprung up in New Jersey and Pennsylvania to fight the plundering and raping occupiers. These militias struck British and Hessian forces at vulnerable times, such as during transport, and won many skirmishes. Colonel Johann Gottlieb Rahl's forces in Trenton were constantly on alert for attacks, and Colonel von Dunop was forced to retreat from his position at Bordentown. The militias were a strong departure from what Washington had experienced during his military training. They often moved independently without consulting central command. Instead of asserting his authority by barking orders, Washington learned to work with these independent rebels and asked for their input as he planned strategy. Based on militia intelligence, Washington learned that Trenton was a weak position. Bolstered by this news, he made plans to attack on Christmas night. The Delaware crossing on Christmas night was hampered by a strong storm and ice-choked waters. Nevertheless, the Americans, even with their heavy artillery, made it across the river and surprised British forces at Trenton early on the following morning. The colonial forces struck from two flanks, attacking from different positions, and won a decisive victory. Afterwards, Washington made the uneasy decision to pull his forces back to Delaware and contemplate the next move. After incentivizing troops whose enlistment contracts ran out at the end of the year with a rousing speech and promise of a $10 bonus, Washington struck Trenton again. By taking a position on one side of the Assunpink Bridge, the rebels were able to hold off a superior number of British forces. Thinking the Continental Army would continue to attack Trenton, General Charles Cornwallis sent reinforcements. In the meantime, however, Washington made the bold decision to send his exhausted forces, some of whom were without proper shoes, to take over the garrison at Princeton. The troops rallied to the cause. After a bloody battle on January 3, 1777, the Continental Army was successful. After the setback in New York, the success of the Continental Army in New Jersey proved that Washington had learned to work with his ragtag rebel forces. In the process of his New Jersey victories, Washington learned to soften his traditional military stance and manage his army of independent-thinking militias. The success of the Continental Army in New Jersey bolstered support for the revolution among the colonists. An increasing number of nimble militias from all over the colony sprang up ready to engage the British. The ensuing war was often fought guerrilla style, with bands of rebels striking vulnerable British targets and then hastily retreating. By the spring of 1777, a vast British force of over 31,000 had been reduced to just 14,000 viable soldiers. Key insights. 1. Even after initial victories culminating in March 1776, General George Washington was wary of the state of the Continental Army and feared massive British retaliation in New York. 2. The commander of the British Army, William Howe, believed in negotiating with American colonists. He pursued a military strategy to subdue, not annihilate, the colonists. 3. About two-thirds of the entire British Army was sent to the colonies. A large proportion of these troops were Hessians or German mercenaries. 4. Washington blamed himself for the Army's defeat in New York. He recognized weakness in intelligence gathering and troop positioning and vowed to fix his errors. 5. Howe offered amnesty to rebel colonists during the New Jersey occupation. However, the majority of its citizens rallied against British troops. 6. Independent New Jersey and Pennsylvania militias played an important role in weakening British positions with surprise attacks. With each success, more men joined the militias. 7. The Continental Army was the most literate to date. Many soldiers read and were inspired by Thomas Paine's works Common Sense, 1776, and a series entitled The American Crisis, 1776-1783. 8. Robert Morris, a wealthy merchant based in Trenton, worked closely with Washington and was highly instrumental in raising funds for supplies for the Continental troops. 9. As the new year of 1777 dawned, Washington was facing the loss of many of his troops due to expired contracts. He made an impassioned plea for them to stay and offered a $10 bonus. 10. A key to success in the Second Battle of Trenton was the strategic positioning of Continental forces at an elevated site across Trenton's Assunpink Bridge. 11. Due to the nature of the American forces, Washington's style evolved from his more traditional hierarchical training to a calm and inclusive approach. 12. The Continental Army's victories in New Jersey spurred the cause among the colonists while making the British less supportive of the war. 13. The Continental Army, unlike the British, aimed to treat prisoners with respect. 14. In many ways, the development of the Continental Army's free-thinking militias, answerable only to Congress, was a harbinger of the evolution of American democracy. Important people. David Hackett Fisher, author, has written several books on American history and received the 2005 Pulitzer Prize in History for Washington's Crossing. He is the Earl Warren Professor of History Emeritus at Brandeis University. General George Washington, 1732-1799, assumed command of the Continental Army on July 3, 1775. General William Howe, 1729-1814, was Commander-in-Chief of British forces during the American Revolution until he resigned in 1778. General Charles Cornwallis, 1738-1805, was a British aristocrat and army officer who commanded British forces during the New Jersey occupation. Colonel Johann Gottlieb Rahl, 1726-1776, was the German commander of Hessian troops at the time of Washington's crossing. He died after being wounded in the ensuing Battle of Trenton. Colonel Karl Emilius von Dunop, 1732-1777, was a Hessian commander and British ally in the American Revolutionary War. Robert Morris, 1734-1806, was a wealthy merchant who supplied the Continental Army. Author's style. David Fisher Hackett weaves together the intricate aspects of Washington's crossing into an engaging narrative. He follows the chronological unfolding of events while supplying many relevant backstories. The text includes numerous footnotes. The illustrations include maps, many portraits, and paintings and sketches of described military action. There is an extensive appendix, including a bibliography, a section on the discipline of historiography, which involves an examination of historical perspectives, a list of sources, and an index. Author's Perspective. David Hackett Fisher believes historians can fall into the trap of backward thinking when they do not account for the fact that their subjects could not know the future or the consequences of their actions. Even the most erroneous decisions, when viewed in hindsight, may have seemed like the most logical action at the time. For example, Fisher argues that General Howe's decision to have British forces occupy New Jersey instead of pursuing the Continental Army was based on his desire to avoid more bloodshed and his belief that most colonists were British sympathizers who would yield to British rule. Intended audience. Fisher wrote Washington's Crossing as part of a series of historical narratives called Pivotal Moments in American History. The founders of this series include historians James M. McPherson and David Greenberg. The series is an attempt to bring important historical events to life with engaging narratives suitable for the general public. Washington's Crossing is also an excellent source for students of American history. This has been Analysis of David Hackett Fisher's Washington's Crossing by Milky Way, narrated by Dwight Equitz. Copyright 2017 by Milky Way. Production copyright 2017 by Milky Way.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.